Today's shir is Masech Baba Basra, Daf Kuf Ayin Beis, and we will begin Be'ezer Hashem Yisbarach on Daf Kuf Ayin Beis, Amar Aleph, the fourth line from the top. It says the Gemara, Amar Rabba Barav Shila, Lahani Kas Vishtarak Nihaisam. He said to those individuals who would write documents to represent, to testify that there was a kinyan that took place, there was a matana, where somebody gave somebody else something that they owned. There was a sale where somebody sold something that they owned. And he would instruct them, Kiksiv shtar hakniyasa, when you write those kind of documents, if you remember the day when this transaction took place, kisfu, write that day into the shtar. Because we need to be concerned, as we've been discussing in our shiurim, that after the sale took place, everything that the seller has, that the lender has, that the borrower has, becomes meshubet, becomes mortgaged to the loan. So we should know that this when that took place. Now, of course, this isn't always relevant. As we discussed in our previous year, the halacha is that by shtar matana, a gift is usually not given with achrayis. However, it's important to know when a transaction took place. If anything, the Rishonim point out, when there's a loan that takes place, writing the date becomes, as we just said, so very important. And we've also learned, and we will learn in our shir, that sometimes you could write a document for the loiva even though the malva is not there. And the question that will come up, if you write that document to the loiva when the malva is not there, when does the shibud begin? Does it begin at the time of the writing of the loan document or at the actual loan? Viloi. But he continues saying, if you don't recall when the transaction took place, ksiva yoimu the ksiv kaimsabe, write the day that you're writing the shtar, because kidei kihechad loy mischazik shikra, if it's not going to be that day, then writing a day that isn't the day that the transaction took place, writing it not on the day where this is being written, looks just some other date, would look like Mechzik Shikra. Of course, we have to remember, says the Rashba, as we learned in our previous year, that if the shtar was not written on the day that the actual transaction took place, so we discussed at the end of our previous year that a shtar me'ucher, a shtar that's post-dated, is a kosher shtar, but we also learned that what's appropriate to do is write into the shtar that it is a shtar, that it is a shtar ucher. And we explained, because if there'll be a shoiver written around this transaction, that can lead to corruption. And with the Gemara explained, one of the ways to avoid that is by writing in the shtar explicitly that it's a shtar ucher. Continues the Gemara, Amalu Rav L'Safri. Rav would tell to the people who his scribes that wrote shtaris, V'ken Amalu Rav Huna L'Safri, Ki Kamti B'Shili, if you are in the city of Shili and you're writing a shtar, makes no difference what type of a shtar, shtar matono, shtar mekach, shtar avob, or any type of document, you should write Kisu B'Shili, write that this document was written in Shili. V'Avgav, the Mimsril Chamili Behini, even though the shtar was the instructions and the transaction for which you're writing the shtar might have taken place in the city of Hini, it doesn't make a difference. Similarly, Ki Kam to Behini, if you're actually in Hini, Kesu Behini, write that this shtar was written in Hini, Avgav, even though the transaction that is being represented in the shtar was done in Shili. And again, the reason is because Mechzik Shikra, if somebody sees me writing a shtar in a certain location, and I'm writing that it's a different location, that's Mechzik Kishikra. It looks like it's not true. Now, the Rishonim make a very important point. They say that it's not necessary always to write the place where the shtar was written. What the Gemara means to say is that if you're writing the place, then you have to be careful to be accurate in what you're writing. And the reason why you have to be careful to be accurate in why you're writing is, one, as we just explained, because Mechzik Kishikra, if it says something which isn't true, it disqualifies the shtar entirely. And moreover, we have learned that one of the ways any Eidus becomes disqualified is when they're challenged, that how could have you said that you were in this place at this time when you were with us, or we know you were elsewhere at that time. And the same will be here. If we're going to have a shtar that's going to say that the Edom are testifying that they wrote the shtar in a certain location and a certain date, and of course, as we have been learning in our shiurim, the date of the shtar is very critical. So therefore, the Gemara says that we have to be careful to write what's honest, because otherwise, when there'll be a claim against Edom, that im amana hayisem. The Paiskim discuss an interesting question: if a ksuba was written, and the ksuba was written at a wedding, and then a couple of days later they realized that there was a mistake. If when we rewrite the ksuba, do we have to rewrite the ksuba? With what date do we rewrite the ksuba? And the poskim say that we could write by ksuba, going back to the Gemara that we began our shiur with today, we could write the date of the original transaction. Because our Gemara taught us that if the Edom recall when this transaction took place, then that's the date that could be put into the shtar. And therefore, in this case, if the Edom recall when it was written, just a couple of days after the wedding, the halacha is we could write that date in the shtar. Our Gemara has also introduced the concept of Mechzik Kishikra, how we have to be so concerned about something which is not 100% true. And the Paiskim have an interesting discussion. Of course, we know that the Torah Kedoshah says, B'dvah Sheket Tirchak, how careful a person has to be to always be truthful. The question is, if somebody says something that's not true, but that doesn't really make a difference, his lie doesn't have any real repercussion. The halacha is, what will be the halacha? Is that a lie that should not be said? Or, of course, it's a lie that should be said, but will one be over midvar sheket tirchak? And there are discussions amongst the Rishonim about that consideration. We see throughout Shas that there's a concept of amigui, where somebody could have said a different claim, a better claim. And the fact that they could have said a better claim is considered legitimate in Beis Din. But how could have you said a better claim if it's not true? The answer is that it's not considered sheker if it doesn't really make a difference. Most poskim, however, are of the opinion that it's certainly usur. It may not be usur as much as where it makes a difference, but it's usur. And there's a paragraph that the Chazon Ish in his Sefer Emunah B'Tochen, Perek Dalet, Ois Yud Gimel, discusses this issue. And he says that the point of Midvash Sheket Tirchak is not just because a person is not allowed to say a lie which could have repercussions that are inappropriate, but rather the Chazon Ish Tzal explains that what the Torah means to tell us when it says Midvash Sheker Tirchak is that a person who Rachmana Litzlan becomes accustomed to say something which is not true, what happens with that individual is that becomes the way he lives. The way he lives is that he says things that aren't true, and those things that aren't true becomes his habit, that's the way to talk. And that, of course, is totally unacceptable. And therefore, Chazanis says, whether it makes a difference what he said that wasn't what he said which wasn't true, or it doesn't make a difference what he said wasn't true, then the halacha is that it's something to be avoided. I did see that there are others that suggest that even though, of course, one should never lie, but the issa deraisa, the actual issa deraisa of Midvash Sheker Tirchak is only violated, that issa is only violated when somebody says the sheker in Bezdin. So I saw a very interesting discussion in the Sefer Cheshukei Chemed, where there was somebody who said that he was a Rosh Yeshiva, and he said his yeshiva needed a new Sefer Torah, and they needed to find somebody to donate the Sefer Torah, and they went over to a certain individual, a very generous individual, and this individual said that he's prepared to donate a half of the Sefer Torah that this yeshiva needs, and that they should find somebody else who will donate the other half. They found somebody who was willing to donate that other half. But this person who was willing to donate the half of the Sefer Torah was only willing to donate it as if the Sefer Torah will say on wherever they're going to publicize it that he donated the entire Sefer Torah, which wasn't actually true. He only donated half. So the first thing they had to do they had to go back to the first donor who was willing to give the Sefer Torah, but would he mind that the second donor will take credit as if he gave the entire Sefer Torah? And they went back to that donor, and he said that, of course, I'm willing. My intention in donating the Sefer Torah was never for any publicity. But on the other hand, here we have the Sefer Torah. We're in the Sefer Torah, as we just discussed. It says Midvash Sheker Tirchak, and here we're going to write in the Sefer Torah something which is not true. And can we or may we participate in doing so in the donation of a Sefer Torah which is so holy to do something like that, which is an outright lie? So first he goes into an entire discussion about the appropriateness of publicizing somebody who does something good, somebody who donates tzedakah. And there's the famous tshuva from the Rashba, Chelek Aleph Siman Tuf Kuf Pei Aleph, that we find that the Torah publicizes when people do the right thing. The Torah, the pasuk says regarding Reuven's attempt to save Yosef, the pasuk says, "V'yishma Reuven." And the Medrash says, if Reuven would have been aware that HaKadosh Baruch, that the Torah is going to say, that Reuven attempted to save Yosef, he would have been much more active in doing whatever he could to save Yosef. And the Medrash also continues to say that when Aaron went out to greet Moshe Rabbeinu, after Moshe Rabbeinu was appointed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu by the Sneh to be the one to lead Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, the pasuk says v'inu yoytzu l'krosecha v'ra'acha v'samach b'libay, and the Medrash says that if the Aaron were aware how much credit the Torah gives him for doing the right thing, he would have done so even more publicly. We learned a Gemara early in our Masechta on Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, where somebody gave tzedakah to Hegdish with the stone that he found, the diamond that he found, and the Gemara publicizes what he did. But the question is that, so there is a reason, and it is appropriate to publicize, if that's what the person wants, the mitzvah that he does. But the question here is, yes, we're publicizing, as the Rashba suggests we should do, but are we allowed to say more than we did? So the Chashukei Chemed says that he brings rayas that you may. The Pasuk says, V'yas B'tzalel as Aaron. B'tzalel was the one that did the made the Aaron. And Rashi says, L'fisha nosa nafsha amalacha yos m'shecha chamim. He did more than anyone else. The Kras al Shemai, he gets credit. So we see from here, he says, that B'tzalel was not the only one that participated in creating the Aaron. But since he was so active, that's why he gets credit. And the same thing, the Gemara in Masechet Sota, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, teaches us, V'yikach Moshe Atzmas Yosef Imoi. And then the Pasuk says the Gemara, V'es Atzmas Yosef Ashehelu B'nei Yisrael. So the Gemara question, who was the one that brought the Atzmas Yosef out of Mitzrayim? Was it Moshe or was it Klai Yisrael? And the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chama Bar Chanina, if somebody begins doing something, but he doesn't have the opportunity to finish what he began, the Torah gives credit to the person who actually finished the mitzvah, kilo asa, even though he didn't do the same mitzvah. And then he quotes the Gemara that we learned earlier in our Masechta, and Daf Chaf Aleph, Amar Aleph, Amar Bihuda Marav, Ram Zach Oyselish Latoiv, Yeshua Begamlishmai. We always have to give credit to Yeshua Ben Galma. Shemalehu Nishtakach Torah Yisrael. If not for him, Torah would have been forgotten by Klai Yisrael. Because Yeshua Ben Galma was the one that instituted yeshivas in Klai Yisrael. And here too he says, it doesn't mean that Yeshua Ben Galma was the only individual that ever made a yeshiva in Klai Yisrael. They ever built the yeshiva in Klai Yisrael. But because he was the one that instituted the idea of how yeshiva should be built, he gets the credit. So we see that the Gemara and Chazal give credit to people even though they did not necessarily do the entire job. And here too, even though this person only donated half of the Sefer Torah, and he goes on to say, if not for the half that he donated, we wouldn't have the Sefer Torah. And as we said, the other donor is prepared and more than happy to let this person who's giving the second half get credit for the entire Sefer Torah. Given all of those considerations, he therefore says that we can allow for the Sefer Torah to have on the Sefer Torah only the second donor's name, and it won't be a violation of Vashaka Tekak. Says the Gemara Amar Rava, Hayman de Nokat Shtara Bar Mezuzi. A Malva who has a document that says that he is owed 100 Zuz. Vama, and he tells the Edom, can you please, instead of having this document that's 100 Zuz, please make it into Shavin Nile Trei Beinei Chamshin Chamshin. I'd rather have two documents that are 50 each. And the Ritva points out, based on the Gemara we learned in our previous year, that once Edom have written and assigned a shtar, that they can never redo it. Here the Gemara must be speaking about a case that at the time of the writing of the shtar, the Malva requested that instead of it being $100 shtar, it should be $250 shtaris. The other Rishonim, however, say, not Rishonim, the Tumim says, that the way to understand the Gemara, it's not the Edom, for as we learned in our previous year, Edom cannot rewrite a shtar after it's written. Rather, the situation of our Gemara is Bezdin, where Bezdin has a right to rewrite a shtar, and the discussion in our Gemara is, can Bezdin now transferred into $250 stars. Says the Gemara, Loy Meshvinaloy. We don't honor that request. Answers the Gemara, my Tama. Why is that so? Answers the Gemara of the Rabbanan Milsa. Chazal acted in a way the Nichle Lamalva and Nichle Loiva. That's to the benefit of the Malva and the Loiva. Nichle Lamalva, it's to the benefit of the Malva. Then if there only be one star, if the Loiva will only pay up part of the star, so as we discussed extensively in our previous year, what's going to happen? We're going to give him a shiver. We're going to give him a receipt for the part that he paid. And he's always, as we learned, going to be concerned that maybe he's going to lose that shiver. And in order to make sure, and then if he loses the shiver, then the malva, who has the shtar that has the entire amount that's owed, will be able to collect the entire amount. So in order to do that, so that will put pressure on the loiva to pay up. But if there's going to be two shtaris of 50-50, and he pays up 50, so the malva will give him back one of the shtaris. So that pressure that we just described on the loiva to pay up won't be there. On the other hand, nichla loiva, the loiva is happy not to transfer the shtar from 100 into 250s. Because once there's a shtar that says 100, but because of the loiva paying up 50, he only now has to pay that 50. The loch is that under those circumstances, the malva could only collect the balance of 50 with a shvua, which strengthens the position of the loiva. And because it strengthens the position of the loiva it weakens the position of the malva, and we don't want to do that either. Vamarava. Now the Gemara speaks about the reverse situation. If there are two documents, each document is the malva lent 100, but the way it was written up front was with two stars of 50. Vama, and now he requests, I'd rather have just one shtar for $100. The aloch is lemeshvinalei, we wouldn't do so. Because, over Rabbanan Milsa, the nichle lemalva, nichle loiva. Chazal made this rule because it is to the benefit both of the malva and the loiva. Nichle lemalva, it's to the benefit of the malva. Keichen v'loi nifke shtarei. Because if he'll pay up $50, then so that shtar would be returned. The other shtar 50 would be perfectly fine. And therefore, the malva won't have to swear when he comes to collect that 50. The nichle loiva kedei shlo yokef lefaroi, if the halach is that he's going to have now a shtar of 100 and he pays off 50, he'll have to have a shiver, which he'll have to watch. Amar Rav Ashi. If a malva has a shtar, that's for $100. He says, take the shtar, and even though it says that the loiva owes me $100, I'm willing to take a shtar, one shtar. The loiva already paid me 50, and I'll take only one shtar for 50. We don't do so on behalf of the loiva. Even though, at first glance, this is a wonderful favor for the loiva, the Gemara says we don't do so. My Tama, why not? Amrinan, hi Mifrei Pari. The loiva may say, I paid up entirely. Amalei, and if that's the case, that he paid up entirely, so why doesn't he get back his shtar? As we often say in our shiurim, when the loiva pays up the malva, the malva has to give back the shtar. Says the Gemara, he did request that he get back his shtar. However, Amalei, the malva said to him, Irchisli, I lost the shtar, and therefore the only option I have left is Ksasavle Tavra. He wrote for him a shiver. And what does the shiver say? The shiver says that the loiva paid up the $100 to the malva. Now, the Malva, who is indeed holding the shtar, wants to transfer the shtar into 50. But he's really doing something very trickly. Mapklei lahai, he's going to take out now the shtar that has a $50 obligation. And by taking out the shtar that has a $50 obligation, he's going to say, hayachrinahu, this is an entirely different loan. Because the loan, even as the loiva agrees, is a $100 loan. And this loan only represents a $50 loan. And particularly, as the Rishonim point out, if this second shtar will be written not from the date of the original transaction, but from the later date when these instructions were given, he will successfully, perhaps, be able to argue that this is an entirely different loan. And that's why he wasn't being honest, he wasn't being nice, he was being tricky. And therefore, to avoid this, we won't do this on his behalf unless the loiva agrees that that should be done. Our Mishnah that we begin discussing now discusses how a Yerusha should be divided. And of course, the Rishonim discuss how does that subject come into our Perek, which is speaking about Hilchos Shtaros. So the Rishonim say, the reason it's discussed in our Perek, the Rif says, is sometimes things are done, as we had in our previous year, that one party to this situation is more satisfied than the other party. And what we're going to have right now in our Gemara is a very similar situation. Mishnah is a very similar situation where there's a Yerusha that's being divided, but one partner may end up being in a better place than the other. And explains the Mishnah. Shnei Achim, if they're two brothers who are the Yarshim of their father. Echad Ani ve'echad Asher. One is a poor person, one is a wealthy person. And as the Sheet of the Kubetzis points out, the Gemara, when it calls him poor, doesn't mean that he's a pauper. Just for what's going to be relevant to our discussion, he lives like an ani. And the father left him a merchatz, is a bathhouse, or beis habad is a place where olives are crushed. So we look at how the father used this asset. Asur l'shchar, if the father used this as a place of business, he would rent out the bathhouse, he would rent out the olive crush facility. So they continue living that way, and the schar emtza, and they divide that the money, the income that they received. The Rashbam explains that what we're learning from here is that the chazaka that the father used is something that has a very strong point as we learn this Gemara. Moreover, Rabbeinu Yoina points out that the case of our Mishnah is very specific. The case of our Mishnah is where it was a Yerusha. But when we speak about partners that buy something together, so then, of course, it's very different. When brothers get a Yerusha, there's a legitimate claim that one brother can make to the other brother, I want to divide this asset if it's possible. If, however, became partners in an asset, one partner cannot force the other partner to divide the partnership. But if the father used this asset for himself, it was a merchatz that he used for himself, an olive crush place that he used for himself. Hare Asher, the wealthy person, says to the ani, to the poor person, kach lecha avadim, buy avadim, v'yirchatzu b'merchatz, and they'll use the merchatz. And, of course, what does it mean when the Gemara says kach lecha avadim, to the Mishnah mean when they use avadim? So I saw two pshatim. One is he says, if you'll have a staff of people, then you'll be able to use, your staff will be able to use this. If you don't have a staff, I don't have to support that. That's one approach in the Rishonim. The other approach is that when you have a bathhouse, you need people to work at the bathhouse. And what the wealthy brother is saying to the poor brother is, take your staff and let them work in the merchatz. And if you don't want that to be the case, I don't have to suffer. So the Rashba points out that why can't the poor brother say to the rich brother, let's divide it by days. The days that you have it, you'll be able to use it for yourself. And the days I have it, since I don't have a need for it, or not just I don't have a need for it, I don't have the ability to staff it, I'll rent it out. And here we have a big machlokes rishonim poskim, if that's a legitimate claim. Some poskim suggest that our Mishnah is teaching us that we always look, how did the father use it? And if the father used it for personal use, the son has no right to change it, even though he can't and won't use it for personal use. Others say, if that can easily be done, where they're divided by days, and the day that the usher has it, the usher will keep it. And the day that the ani has it, the ani will rent it out, and it doesn't affect the either one. That, of course, may be done. And similarly, the wealthy brother could say to the poor brother, buy olives above Asebe Beis Chabad and use this crushing facility. And if you can't, it doesn't make a difference. So all the Rishonim asked the question. We learned earlier in the Masechta on Daf Yud Gimel that when we have a similar situation, the two brothers yashin something together, we say, the one of them could say to the other, good or agad, buy me out, or I'll buy you out. So why in our Mishnah don't we say the same thing of good or agad? Says the Rambam that if that were possible, then it would be the halacha. Our Mishnah says that neither is ready to buy each other out. The Rosh disagrees. And the Rosh says that the halacha is that good or agad is only if both brothers equally have the opportunity to do it. But as if in the case that we are discussing now, both brothers don't have that ability. One brother is poor. So Chazal did not impose good or agad. The Shema discusses what would be the case of our Mishnah, as we've been learning, that the poor brother has no use for this asset. So could he sell off his half to somebody else? He can't afford to buy it all off, but could he sell off his half? So says the Shema that yes, the brother has a right to do so. There are others that disagree with the Shema, and they say that the brother, the rich brother, could say to the poor brother, I'm prepared to keep you. We are brothers, and we inherit this. We inherited this from our father together. And because we inherited this from our father together, we're going to yashin it together. But in a case where you're going to bring somebody else here, I'm not agreeable that somebody else should be brought into this situation. It's not my brother. I don't know who it is. Says the Gemara, Shnaim Shoyu Bir Achas, another halacha, where we have two people living in a city. Shem Echad Yosef Ben Shimon. The name of one of these individuals is Yosef Ben Shimon. V'shem Achad Yosef Ben Shimon. The two people in the city, both of them named Yosef and Shimon, and Yechayim Hoitzi Shtach Chayv Zelzeh. They can't be the ones to present a loan, a document that you owe me money. Says the Ritva that, again, how does this Mishnah come into our Masechta? Because it's, again, as we learned in our previous year, that under certain circumstances, Chazal were concerned that by what we do, it may make a person happy or unhappy. And here, too, we have a situation, since, as we just learned, neither could present a shtar chayv, so that makes them happy. The Torah says that our Mishnah is very specific, that they're both in the same city. And therefore, because they're both in the same city, we have this concern. But as soon as what we're learning about is not the same city, then we don't have to be concerned. Furthermore, says the Mishnah, nobody could present a shtar choiv against them. The reason why nobody could present a shtar choiv against them, because if you're going to go to one Yosef ben Shimon and say to him, you're the loiver that owes me money, he's going to say that it's not me, it's the other Yosef ben Shimon. And therefore, unless the malva could definitively prove who is his loiver, that the aloch is that it's not, you can't present against either. Of course, says the Ritva, if at the date that the shtar was written, one of these Yosef ben Shimon was a katan, and the other one was a gadol, that would change the halacha, because the halacha, of course, assumes that it was the gadol that borrowed the money, not the katan. Moreover, says the Aruch HaShulchan, that one of the ways to avoid the problem is having the loiva, the real loiva, at the time of the loan, sign the document. And as we often discuss in our shiurim, we could then check whose signature it is. And then by checking whose signature it is, we can know who is the true loiver. Says the Rashba, what will be the halacha? So again, we have these two people who have the same name, and we can't definitively prove who is the loiver. So the malva is going to bring Adam, and those Adam will be able to identify that we know that this person, this Yosef ben Shimon, is the loiver. So that would be, of course, an excellent way to make your point. But the question is, will that shtar now be considered a shtar, will that shtar now be considered a milva al peh or a milva b'shtar? Because what we know that we often discuss that in halacha, a milva b'shtar is much stronger than milva al peh. But when is it considered a milva b'shtar? When you have Edom signed on the shtar. Because the Edom that are signed on the shtar, as we often discuss in our shiurim, create a kol. But it could be that that kol is only created when the Edom are Edom who are on the shtar. But if the kol is not created by Edom who are actually on the shtar, but rather the kol is created by outsiders who are testifying about the shtar, that won't be considered a milva b'shtar. Continues the Mishnah. Im nimtza lecha ben shtei roisav, if somebody has a receipt found amongst his documents, and on that receipt it says, shtor shel Yosef ben Shimon peruah, the shtar that Yosef ben Shimon owes me money is paid up, so we don't know which one is that. And therefore, the halacha is shtar shnei peruim, if they both owed him money, the Gemara will explain this more, are considered paid up. Ketzed yasu. So now ask the Mishnah, if you have the situation that you have people who have the same name in the same town, what should we do to prevent this type of situation? So this is the Mishnah Yishaleshu. We shouldn't just write the father's name. We should even write the grandfather's name, Yosef ben Shimon ben Yaakov. But what, says the Mishnah, is the Alochim Hoyim Mishloshim, that even if you're going to write the grandfather's name, they're going to have the same name. So Yichtavu Simon, that they should write some sort of a Simon. But the Tiferes Yisrael says, why didn't the Mishnah say write the fourth generation up? So Tiferes Yisrael says that people don't know, or are not easily identified by their great-grandfather's name. And since it's not a way that people are normally known or identified, it's not considered a valid way of identifying. What is considered a valid siman? Certainly, if there's a clear siman on the person, he's tall, he's short, and the other one is not the same, then that's considered a good siman. The Paiskim discuss what would be if one father is alive and one's father is not alive. So one the right Joseph and Shimon Zatzal, and one the right Joseph and Shimon Shlita. Will that be a good siman? Paiskim say it's not considered a good siman. The reason it's not considered a good siman is because this is going to be the confusion. Is the Zatzal and the Shlita referring to the father, or are the Zatzal and the Shlita referring to the son? And giving a siman that lacks that clarity doesn't accomplish much. The Chasam Sofer also says that using a mother's name for a siman is not a good siman, because again, since people are called up not by their mother's name, by their father's name, so a mother's name is not really much of a siman. Says the Mishnah Hayim Simonim, we can't figure out that a siman, a unique siman for these individuals, yichtivu koyim. And I saw that the Achrayim point out, isn't writing that somebody, a koyin or a levi, a wonderful siman? So why didn't the Gemara right away, why didn't the Mishnah right away offer that as a way to do this? So they say, apparently, in those times, we know Bizman Azeh, if somebody's a koyin and he's called up to the Torah, he's called up as a koyin, as a levi. Apparently, that wasn't what was done in the time of the Mishnah. The Pasuk in Parashas Pichas says, Pinchas ben Alaz ben Aaron HaKoyin, Heshiv es Chamasi Mi'al b'nei Yisrael. And Rashi says, Lefi shay yishvatim mevazim ha'isai, the shvatim were embarrassing him, who said, Arisim ben Putizeh, Shepitim avi imay agolim by the Zora. He had a grandfather who was a priest, and now v'harg ne'as yishavim Yisrael, now he had the audacity to kill a Nasi. The Torah gives us yichus up to Aaron. So the Sefer Tzitzim Aprochim says that the way to understand that pasuk is our Mishnah has been discussing, if you have two individuals in the city, both with the name of Yosef ben Shimon, the way to write the shtar is to include a grandfather or a siman, or that is a Kohen. So if somebody is a Kohen, that's the best siman. So the question that the Medrash says, the question that Rashi had, is the Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron a Kohen. So you're going to suggest that the reason his grandfather's name has to be included is because there might have been another individual whose name was Pinchas ben Elazar. But if that's the case, why do you have to write that name? You could have just said HaKoyin. And that's, as Mishnah just said, a wonderful siman. Why was it necessary, asks Rashi, to write Aaron? And the answer why it was necessary to write Aaron is because we want to bring specifically, says Rashi, his yichus after Aaron. Not because that's the best way to identify him, but because we want to identify that he was a descendant of Aaron. Says the Gemara, who started the Nafag Lebedin and the Rav Huna, there was a star that was presented in the Bezna Rav Huna, Davik Sibay, Ani Ploini Bar Ploini, Levisi Money Mimcha. I borrowed money from Mimcha from you, but the Malva's name was not identified. Amar Rav Huna, so Rav Huna says, the word Mimcha can mean anybody. It can mean a Filim Reish Galusa, a Filim Mishvar Malka. It could be the king, it could be the Reish Gaila. And therefore, just because somebody is holding on to the shtar, it doesn't mean that he is the owner of that shtar. Because It doesn't identify him as the owner. So the Rishonim say, why is the fact that he's holding the shtar not a raya that it's his shtar? Isn't it make sense that if I'm holding the shtar, it's a proof that I am the malva of the shtar? So the Rishonim say that, and this is a halacha in Hilchos Shtaris. What we learn here in Hilchos Shtaris is that the shtar has to identify, has to be completely self-sufficient. And if the shtar is not on its own identifiable who is the malva, then we can't accept it as a good shtar. And therefore, they suggest that even if Adam will show up and say, yes, we could testify that the person who's written the shtar is the malva, it wouldn't make a difference. Amalei Rav Chisda l'Rabba. So Rav Chisda told Rabba, puk ayin ba, look into this halacha, because the Lord the Baal Rav Huna Menach, in the evening Rav Huna will ask you, what is the halacha in this situation? And as I saw, the Rosh explains that this is the way Rav Huna would teach his Talmidim. He would come to the yeshiva, pose a question, and then that night he would come back for them to tell them what they thought about the question. So he found the Brisa, the Tanya. Get Sheyesh Lov Edom. We have a divorce document that has on it Edom. However, in this man, it doesn't have a date. Avishalom and Kasabah. It says, I divorced it today, but it doesn't say which day. Kasher. Alma. Why? But it doesn't have a date. The answer is, when it says Hayoim, we understand it to mean Hahu Yoima the Nafak Bei Mashma. It means the day that it was presented in Bezdin. Hachanami, when it says in the Shtar, Mimcha, we assume my who gathered the Nafak Metusa Yodi Mashma, the person who's presenting the Shtar, it's his Shtar. Amalei Abaya, says Abaya to Rava, the Dama Abishol that says Gereshti Hayoim, the reason why it's kosher, it goes back to something that we've mentioned. Kerevelozo Sfirulei, Dama Edom Asirikarti, that the real power of a get is presented by the Edom Asiru, who see the husband who gave the get, and they could testify that happened on whatever day. Avalhocha, when we say a shtar that says mimcha, we have to be concerned lechishnu nafila, that maybe the malva, the real malva of the shtar, dropped it, and the shtar, somebody else picked it up. Amalei, so Rava said, tabaya lenafila lechishinin. Chazal weren't concerned for that. Says Rabba, umenot temra, where do I have that? From where did I learn the lechishinin nafila? The Tanan, the Mishnah, we just learned, said Shnayim Shaber Achas, Shem Echad Yosef and Shimon, V'Shem Acher Yosef and Shimon. Eni Yichayim L'Hoitzi Shtar Choyv Zal Zeh, V'Loi Acher Yochel L'Hoitzi L'Hayim Shtar Choyv. Ha Heim Al Acherim, if there's a shtar that says that they are the Malva, Yichayim, they can't present a shtar to a live and say, you owe me money. But the question is, why should that be okay? Amai, Leichesh Nafila, why can't we say that maybe one Yosef ben Shimon dropped the shtar and the other Yosef ben Shimon picked up the shtar, but it's really not money that's owed to him? Says the Gemara, Elash Mamina, Nafila Leicheshinin. We're not concerned for such a circumstance. Says the Gemara, and how does Abaya, who is concerned for Nafila, respond? Abaya, Nafila Chad Leicheshinin. That one Yosef ben Shimon dropped the shtar and the other Yosef ben Shimon picked it up, that's very far-fetched, and we need not be concerned for that. Here, this shtar says, Mimcha, that I owe you money, and it doesn't say who is the money owed to. So now, it could be anybody. So that's Nefil the Rabbim. That means that many people might have picked up the shtar. Any one of many people might have picked up the shtar. For that, Chashin and Chazal were concerned and therefore disqualified the shtar.